Chapter 2. We were out from under the shade of the camp and along the sandy river of a road, driving into the western sun. The bush thick to the edge of the sand, solid as a thicket, the little hills rising above it, and all along the road we passed groups of people making their way to the westward. Some were naked, except for a greasy cloth knotted over one shoulder, and carried bows and sealed quivers of arrows. Others carried spears. The wealthy carried umbrellas and wore draped white cloth, and their women walked behind them, with their pots and pans. Bundles and loads of skins were scattered along ahead on the heads of other natives. All were traveling away from the famine, and in the heat, my feet out over the side of the car to keep them away from the heat of the engine, hat low, over the eyes against the sun, watching the road, the people, and all clearings in the bush for game. We drove to the westward. Once we saw three lesser kudu cows in an open place of broken bush, gray, big-bellied, long-necked, small-headed, and with big ears. They moved quickly into the woods and were gone. We left the car and tracked them, but there was no bull track. A little beyond, there were a flock of guineas, quick-legged across the road, running steady-headed with the motion of the trotters. As I jumped from the car and sprinted after them, they rocketed up, their legs tucked close beneath them, heavy-bodied, short wings drumming, cackling, to go over the trees ahead. I dropped two that thumped hard when they fell, and as they lay, wings beating, Abdullah cut their heads off so that they would be legal eating. He put them in the car where Mkola sat laughing, his old man's healthy laugh, his making fun of me laugh, his bird-shooting laugh that dated from a streak of raging misses one time that had delighted him. Now, when I killed, it was a joke, as when we shot a hyena, the funniest joke of all. He laughed always to see the birds tumble, and when I missed, he roared and shook his head again and again. "Ask him what the hell he's laughing about," I asked Pop once. "At Bwana," Mkola said, and shook his head. "At the little birds."
"He thinks you're funny," Pop said. "God damn it, I am funny, but the hell with him." "He thinks you're very funny," Pop said. "Now the Mem Sahib and I would never laugh."
"Shoot them yourself."
"No. You're the birdshot, the self-confessed birdshot," she said.
So bird shooting became this marvelous joke. If I killed, the joke was on the birds, and Mkola would shake his head and laugh and make his hands go round and round to show how the bird turned over in the air. And if I missed, I was the clown of the piece, and he would look at me and shake with laughing. Only the hyenas were funnier.
Highly humorous was the hyena, obscenely loping, full belly dragging at daylight on the plain, who shot from the stern, skittered on into his speed to tumble end over end. Mirth-provoking was the hyena that stopped out of range by an alkali lake to look back and hit in the chest, went over on his back, his 4 feet and his full belly in the air. Nothing could be more jolly than the hyena coming suddenly wedge-headed and stinking out of high grass by a donga, hit at 10 yards, who raced his tail in 3 narrowing, scampering circles until he died. It was funny to Mkola to see a hyena shot at close range. There was that comic slap of the bullet and the hyena's agitated surprise to find death inside of him. It was funnier to see a hyena shot at a great distance, in the heat shimmer of the plane, to see him go over backwards, to see him start that frantic circle, to see that electric speed that meant he was racing the little nickel death inside him. But the great joke of all, the thing Mkola waved his hands across his face about and turned away and shook his head and laughed, ashamed even of the hyena, the pinnacle of hyenic humor, was the hyena, the classic hyena, that hit too far back while running, would circle madly, snapping and tearing at himself until he pulled his own intestines out and then stood there jerking them out and eating them with relish.
"Fisi!" Mkola would say and shake his head in delighted sorrow at there being such an awful beast. Fisi, the hyena, hermaphroditic, self-eating devourer of the dead, trailer of calving cows, hamstringer, potential biter off of your face at night while you slept, sad yowler, camp follower, stinking fowl with jaws that crack the bones the lion leaves, belly dragging, loping away on the brown plain, looking back, mongrel dog smart in the face, whack from the little man-liker, and then the horrid circle starting.
"Fisi!" Mkola laughed, ashamed of him, shaking his bald black head. "Fisi! Eats himself! Fisi!"
The hyena was a dirty joke, but bird shooting was a clean joke. My whiskey was a clean joke. There were many variations of that joke. Some we come to later. The Mohammedans and all religions were a joke. A joke on all the people who had them. Charo, the other gun barrow, was short, very serious, and highly religious. All Ramadan, he never swallowed his saliva until sunset. And when the sun was almost down, I'd see him watching nervously. He had a bottle with him of some sort of tea, and he would finger it and watch the sun, and I would see him Kola watching him and pretending not to see. This was not outrightly funny to him. This was something that he could not laugh about openly, but that he felt superior to, and wondered at the silliness of it. The Mohammedan religion was very fashionable, and all the higher social grades among the boys were Mohammedans. It was something that gave caste, something to believe in, something fashionable and God-giving to suffer a little for each year, something that made you superior to other people, something that gave you more complicated habits of eating, something that I understood and Mkola did not understand, nor care about. And he watched Charo watch for the sun to set with the blank look on his face that it put on about all things that he was not a part of. Charo was deadly thirsty and truly devout, and the sun set very slowly. I looked at it, red over the trees, nudged him, and he grinned. Mkola offered me the bottle of water solemnly. I shook my head, and Charo grinned again. Mkola looked blank. Then the sun was down, and Charo had the bottle tilted up, his Adam's apple rising and falling greedily, and Mkola looking at him, and then looking away. In the early days, before we became good friends, he did not trust me at all. When anything came up, he went into this blankness. I liked Charo much better then. We understood each other on the question of religion, and Charo admired my shooting and always shook hands and smiled when we had killed anything particularly good. This was flattering and pleasing. Mkola looked on all of this early shooting as a series of lucky accidents. We were supposed to shoot. We'd not yet shot anything that amounted to anything, and he was not really my gun bearer. He was Mr. Jackson Phillips' gun bearer, and he had been loaned to me. I meant nothing to him. He did not like me nor dislike me. He was politely contemptuous of Carl. Who he liked was Mama. The evening we killed the first lion, it was dark when we came in sight of camp. The killing of the lion had been confused and unsatisfactory. It was agreed beforehand that POM should have the first shot, but since it was the first lion any of us had ever shot at, and it was very late in the day, really too late to take the lion on, once he was hit, we were to make a dogfight of it, and anyone was free to get him. This was a good plan, as it was nearly sundown, and if the lion got into cover, wounded, it would be too dark to do anything about it without a mess. I remember seeing the lion looking yellow and heavy-headed and enormous against a scrubby-looking tree in a patch of orchard bush, and POM kneeling to shoot and wanting to tell her to sit down and make sure of him. Then, there was the short-barreled explosion of the manliker, and the lion was going to the left on a run, a strange, heavy-shouldered, foot-swinging cat run. I hit him with the Springfield, and he went down and spun over, and I shot again, too quickly, and threw a cloud of dirt over him. But there he was, stretched out on his belly, and with the sun just over the top of the trees, and the grass very green, we walked up on him like a posse, or a gang of black and tans, guns ready and cocked, not knowing whether he was stunned or dead. When we were close, Mkola threw a stone at him. It hit him in the flank, and from the way it hit, you could tell he was a dead animal. I was sure POM had hit him, but there was only one bullet hole well back, just below the spine, and ranging forward to come to the surface under the skin of the chest. You could feel the bullet under the skin, and Mkola made a slit and cut it out. It was a 220-grain solid bullet from the Springfield, and it had raked him, going through lungs and heart. I was so surprised by the way he'd rolled over dead from the shot after we had prepared for a charge, for heroics, and for drama, that I felt more let down than pleased. It was our first lion, and we were very ignorant, and this was not what we had paid to see. Charo and Mkola both shook POM's hand, and then Charo came over and shook hands with me.
"Good shot, Bwana," he said in Swahili. "Piga mizurai."
"Did you shoot, Carl?" I asked.
"No, I was going to when you shot."
"You didn't shoot him, Pop?"
"No, you'd have heard it."
He opened the breech and took out the two big 450 number twos.
"I'm sure I missed him," POM said.
"I was sure you hit him. I still think you hit him," I said.
"Mama hit,"
Mkola said.
"Where?"
Charo asked.
"Hit,"
said Mkola. Hit!
He rolled him over, Pop said to me. God, he went over like a rabbit. I couldn't believe it.
Mama, piga, Mkola said. Piga, Simba!
As we saw the campfire in the dark ahead of us, coming in that night, Mkola suddenly commenced to shout a stream of high-pitched, rapid singing words in Wakamba, ending in the word Simba. Someone at the camp shouted back one word.
Mama,
Mkola shouted, then another long stream, then Mama, Mama. Through the dark came all the porters, the cook, the skinner, the boys, and the headmen.
Mama, Mkola shouted, Mama, piga, Simba.
The boys came dancing, crowding, and beating time and chanting something from down in their chests that started like a cough and sounded like,
Hela mama, hela mama. Hela mama.
The rolling-eyed skinner picked POM up, the big cook and the boys held her, and the others pressing forward to lift, and if not to lift, to touch and hold, they danced and sang through the dark, around the fire, and to our tent.
Hela mama, huh, huh, huh. Hela mama, huh, huh, huh.
They sang the lion dance with that deep lion asthmatic cough in it. Then, at the tent, they put her down, and everyone very shyly shook hands. The boys sang, Missouri, M'sahib, and Mkola and the porters all sang, Missouri, Mama, with much feeling in the accenting of the word Mama. Afterwards, in the chairs in front of the fire, sitting with the drinks, Pop said,
You shot it. Mkola would kill anyone who said you didn't.
You know, I feel as though I did shoot it, POM said. I don't believe I'd be able to stand it if I really had shot it. I'd be too proud. Isn't triumph marvelous?
Good old mama,
Carl said. I believe you did shoot him, I said.
Oh, let's not go into that, POM said. I feel so wonderful about just being supposed to have killed him. You know, people never used to carry me on their shoulders much at home.
No one knows how to behave in America, Pop said. Most uncivilized. We'll carry you in Key West. Carl said. Poor old mama.
Let's not talk about it, POM said. I like it too much. Shouldn't I maybe distribute largesse?
They didn't do it for that, Pop said, but it's all right to give something to celebrate.
Oh, I want to give them all a great deal of money, POM said. Isn't triumph simply marvelous?
Good old mama, I said. You killed him.
No, I didn't. Don't lie to me. Just let me enjoy my triumph.
Anyway, Mkola did not trust me for a long time. Until POM's license ran out, she was his favorite, and we were simply a lot of people who interfered and kept Mama from shooting things. Once her license was out and she was no longer shooting, she dropped back into non-combatant status with him, and as we began to hunt kudu, and Pop stayed in camp and sent us out alone with the trackers, Carl with Charo, and Mkola and I together, Mkola dropped Pop visibly in his estimation. It was only temporary, of course. He was Pop's man, and I believed his working estimations were only from day to day and required an unbroken series of events to have any meaning. But something had happened between us.